KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on the Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
This is 89.9 KCRW. I'm Madeline Brand, and it's time for some film reviews. This week, we have a steamy tennis romp starring Zendaya in a post-Dune victory lap, a documentary about a New York photographer who captured the city's gritty 70s and 80s zeitgeist, a Japanese film about a secret gay romance, and a reissue of Ridley Scott's cult classic, Alien, on its 45th anniversary. Wow. Alonzo Duralde and Dave White are here to guide us through it all. They are film critics and co-hosts of the podcast Linoleum Knife. And Alonzo is the author of the forthcoming book, Hollywood Pride, which comes out next month. Welcome back to both of you.
Thank you.
Hello.
Hello. Okay, first up, let's talk about Challengers. This is a film from the director of Call Me By Your Name. So, of course, it's got to be steamy. And it treats tennis as a metaphor for competition in a love triangle.
What are you going to do now?
Unfortunately, my only skill in life is hitting a ball with a racket.
I want you to be my coach. I want you to be my coach.
How often does this happen? Going after the same girl? Come here.
Which one of us?
Alonzo, is this Jules and Jim on the tennis court or off the tennis court? What's happening?
Kind of, sort of. You mentioned early on that it's a metaphor, and Zendaya's character says early on, tennis isn't a game, it's a relationship. And so you have these three people who first meet in 2006 when they are in the finals of the Junior U.S. Open, and how their relationships evolve over the next 13 years. The movie is kind of framed by this one tennis match that's happening in 2019. And we keep getting a series of flashbacks that show us how we got there and who these people are and who they are to each other and how they manipulate or play off of or control or are controlled by each other in a way that very much mirrors their tactics on the court. But this is a thrilling piece of filmmaking from the way that Guadagnino and his longtime cinematographer capture bodies in motion to Justin Kuritsky's thrilling screenplay, which in its use of flashback is constantly giving you just enough information, but then surprising you with something you didn't know that had been withheld until just the right moment. And all of this is balanced by three incredible lead performances by Zendaya, by Mike Feist, and Josh O'Connor. They really play off each other, if you'll pardon the expression, in a really beautiful way.
Ooh, okay. And Zendaya is just fabulous, I think, in anything that she's in, including perfume ads. So, Dave, what do you think?
I was right there for the full wildness of these lovers. And they are lovers, even as they are also very much intense rivals. The characters are what really drive this movie. They make grave judgment errors and selfish moves. They're complex. They're not always good. It often destabilizes who you think you might be rooting for. And mostly what I love is that these are the kinds of films that tend to wind up at the art house now. Movies that reflect people being people. So it's exciting to watch this get a big release treatment, and it deserves it. And of course, because it is a film from Luca Guadagnino, we're being given the full physicality of these relationships as well. Alonzo is fond of calling him a sensualist. But to get down to the real sort of nitty-gritty about it, this is a formally horny filmmaker who knows exactly how to simultaneously frame his subjects and capture their lusts, their longing, their motives. And the score is something very special as well. Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross are digging into this late 80s club culture where Nine Inch Nails figured quite prominently. There need to be more films scored to pounding electro house, please.
Challengers in theaters tomorrow. Next up, we have Uncropped, a documentary featuring a New York City street photographer named James Hamilton.
Every one of these photographs has James in the photograph. That's why it's funny or poignant or noir.
There's always something else going on. It's not just the subject.
That shot could be a Cardi Bresson. The moment, the framing, friggin' blew my mind.
The best pictures, it's always some little thing that happens. His portraits are so revealing. You would respond to this like somebody punched you in the chest.
Oh, okay. Dave, honestly, I don't really know the name James Hamilton when it comes to famed New York City street photographers like, I don't know, Dion Arbus or Gary Winogrand Ouija or any of the other ones that come to mind. Even Annie Leibovitz. So, but he was as or more prolific. And just looking at the trailer, his photos are really astonishing. So tell us more about who he is.
Well, he, as I said, he's a photojournalist. He's been working in New York since the 1960s, and he has taken everyone's picture. He's photographed bands, actors, the fashion world, film sets, war zones, people on the street, everybody who crossed his path in life or just on assignment. But this story of his career is important because it intersects with the world of print journalism, magazines, newspapers, and most importantly, the world of the alternative weekly newspaper. So he, along with Sylvia Plackey, who's also interviewed here quite a bit, often side by side with him, helped make The Village Voice, a paper that just looked as cool as it read. This is a really wonderful documentary, and it's a retrieval of recent history that's changing very quickly. It's inspiring to watch people who decided that they had no choice but to make their lives out of their creative impulses. And it's also, as captured here in the film, disheartening to watch how corporate meddlers have gone in and scooped up publications and then killed them.
Oh, wow. All right, now, I was in New York in the Village Voice days, and I remember just it was a must read and a must look at with the photographs. So, Alonzo, New York City seems to be the other subject in this movie.
I mean, yes, in a way, because this is a guy who's covering everything from, you know, sort of fancy society parties to, you know, rock stars who are at the Chelsea Hotel. But the thing about Hamilton that's so fascinating is that he's also like one of the first photographers to get images out of the Tiananmen Square massacre. He's also somebody who went and spent months in Ethiopia covering the war there. So he, you know, can mix in this world of glamour and do, you know, the set photographs for the Royal Tenenbaums. But he, you know, contains multitudes, and his camera as unflinchingly captures, you know, child soldiers and massacres as it does. You know, the bright and the beautiful.
Uncropped is showing at the Lemley Royal beginning tomorrow, and in a couple of weeks it'll be on video on demand. Our next film, Egoist, portrays a romance between a Tokyo magazine editor and a personal trainer with a secret life. Okay, so there's a scene between the two main characters where they are meeting one of the characters' parents. And Dave, what did you think of this film? Tell us more about the plot.
So it's about a successful gay fashion magazine editor in Tokyo named Hosuki, played by the actor Ryohei Suzuki. He has a very cool job and a solid team of fellow gay friends. And he meets a somewhat younger personal trainer named Ryuta, played by Hio Miyazawa, and they fall in love. But soon after that, the younger man explains that he is a sex worker in order to help take care of his aging mother. And he says this in order to tell Hosuki that he cannot be in this relationship. It would just complicate it too much. And Hosuki, in turn, offers to pay his way so that he can quit that line of work. Now, from that premise and the title, you might think you're about to get something a little more dangerous than you get, but there is a midpoint twist that flips the title and the premise upside down, and the story becomes something very quiet, and it becomes a narrative of caretaking and love that offers Hosuki a way to retrieve something that he lost even earlier in life. And it's about trading in one idea about your life in favor of another, and it's pretty sentimental, but it doesn't overdo it, and I found it very moving.
Okay. Alonzo, what does this do in terms of portraying a gay love story? Does it capture it in a moving, accurate way?
Yeah, certainly. And I think, you know, obviously all queer love stories are very much about the context of where they're made and when they're made. And so, you know, I'm not an expert in queer life in contemporary Japan, but it is not, identical to queer life in contemporary America. And so even in a city as cosmopolitan as Tokyo, you have these men who are, you know, as you say, they go to meet the parents and it's all like, oh, I haven't met the right woman yet. We're just really close friends. But yeah, the film goes to places that are very moving and very powerful. And yeah, there is sentimentality here. There are, you know, hints of melodrama, but I'm always reminded of Pauline Kael had a review of the great Bette Davis movie, Now Voyager, which is a great sort of sumptuous old Hollywood kind of tearjerker. And Kael said that if the movie were any better, it wouldn't be any good at all. And so sometimes movies have to lean into the heavy emotionality, even if that is a thing that you know, cool film critics might disdain. And this movie owns what it is.
Egoist is out now in limited release. Finally, a 45th anniversary re-release of Alien. That's from the original trailer. No dialogue in that trailer, just a bunch of quick cuts. It's really incredible. And then the line at the end, of course, the classic line, speaking of classic lines, in space, no one can hear you scream. 1979, Alonzo, 2 years after the first Star Wars came out, and at the time, it received mixed reviews. So how does it hold up today, do you think?
Oh, I think it's an unquestioned classic now. I mean, 3 years later, Ridley Scott would also make the critically mixed Blade Runner, and obviously that movie has aged well as well. Yeah, so it's exciting to see Alien back on the big screen, not just because it's Alien and it is one of the great horror movies of all time. But also because I think we're seeing studios more and more going back into the habit of reissuing films, which, you know, in the days, in ye olden times before cable and VHS, it was not uncommon for every few years a studio to re-release a beloved film. You know, the Disney animated films were always in kind of a 7-year cycle. And they would do new trailers and a new poster, and it was a big thing. And that's what Disney is doing for Alien, and I hope we're seeing more of it. I think it's a win-win. The studios own these movies. They don't have to make them again. And audiences are hungry to see films that they love on the big screen, and theaters could certainly use the traffic of the people who want to see those movies on the big screen. So more of this, please, studios.
Definitely. And Dave, how does this original compare, do you think, to the sequels?
Oh, well, see, the first time I saw this movie was the opening weekend in 1979. My mom took me to see it because I was still too young to get into R-rated movies alone. And I have physical memories of the freak out to this day. It is not.
Wait, is that child abuse?
No, that's good parenting. It's not a jolting jump scare film. It's such a slowly and steadily encroaching experience of dread and fear. You don't realize at first what's happening and how the details are being laid out and how its atmosphere is taking over and becoming overwhelming. So I have parenting tips. Be a good parent and shock your children with this one, and they will thank you for it later, especially if they don't know anything about it. Most importantly, getting back to what Alonzo said about the re-release world that used to be, this is how, as a child, I got to see films that were older than me. You know, they would just come back. And the theatrical experience here for this particular film, this like all-timer classic horror movie, is what really matters. It will overwhelm you on the big screen if you've never seen it before. If you have seen it before, this 4K is going to allow you to get even deeper into the gloomy set and shadows of this industrial looking spaceship. It is a very powerful experience on the big screen because you cannot escape to the kitchen or your phone. I'm all in favor of this getting a re-release. I'm in favor of every one of these old movies getting re-releases. Bring them all back.
Alien returns to theaters. It's in wide release, but for a limited time beginning tomorrow. And that does it for this week. The OGs, Alonzo Duraldi and Dave White, film critics and co-hosts of the podcast Linoleum Knife. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on the Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.